I am not leaving Congress. I am coming home to Michigan. With those words, John Dingell made it official. He is leaving Congress after serving more than 58 years. John Dingell was first elected in 1955 to the House seat that had been held by his late father. The 87-year-old Dearborn Democrat has gone on to carve out his own piece of American history. No one has ever served longer in the United States Congress. Joining us now is Michigan Radio political commentator Jack Lessenberry. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Why now? Why the retirement now?
Well, there's a lot of speculation on that. I had wind of this late last year, actually, and I think to some extent, like years ago, John Dingell told me that his ambition was to die on the floor of the House, as John Quincy Adams did after he was president. But I think a number of things happened. John Dingell, let it be very clear, had not lost anything mentally. I had a long two-hour conversation with him in November, December. He's the man he always was. But he's also almost 88 years old. He's had heart problems. He's had a hip transplant. He's hard of hearing. And I think getting around just wasn't as much fun anymore. And he always said that when it wasn't fun and he didn't feel he could really do the job, he would bow out. And I think that time came. The speculation, of course, is he doing this now to pave the way for his wife, Debbie Dingell, who's much younger than the congressman, almost 30 years younger, and there's been widespread speculation that she will now run for the office to succeed him.
He was giving quotes that were published over the weekend that talked about, yeah, my health's pretty good, but seems to be more than that. He finds serving in the House to be, in his words, obnoxious.
Well, I asked him last fall, I said, if you were 29 years old, that's how old he was when he was first elected to Congress, would you do this again? Would you run for Congress if it were today and you knew what you knew now? And he thought for a long time and he said, probably not. And I said, why? And he said, because it had become so polarized, so ideological, so nasty. He grew up in an era where you would campaign against each other, you would bash their issues, and then you'd go out and drink with them, or you'd go out and play golf with them, and you'd sit down after a certain amount of silliness and hash something out. He told me once he was being criticized for not being harder on the automakers about fuel emissions. And he called me that night, and he said, what people don't realize is what I'm saying to the auto companies, if you do what I say, I will get you a deal that you will absolutely hate. And if you don't do what I say, they will give you a deal that will put you out of business. So he was a man who, whether you agreed with him or not, and nobody agreed with him all the time, including me, whether you agreed with him or not, he always tried to do what he thought was the right thing, according to common sense, and he knew that what goes around comes around. He knew there were going to be Democratic years and Republican years, and what John Dingell was about was the good of the Congress and the good of the country.
What does his retirement mean for his district? I know, as you say, his wife Debbie is seen as kind of a front runner for trying for that seat. But what does it mean for his district?
Well, it means I'll have a new congressman. I'll certainly lose seniority. Now, John Dingell himself had sort of had his wings clipped and sort of what a lot of people felt was disgraceful. Nancy Pelosi maneuvered him out of the chairmanship of his committee a few years ago.
I remember that.
And he has sort of the title chairman emeritus, but he took it in good humor. Obviously, they're going to lose a real champion. Debbie Dingell certainly has name recognition. For a while, there was some thought that she might even have to face off against his son, Christopher Dingell, in a primary. That apparently is not going to be the case. He's a judge and hasn't talked about running for Congress. There'll certainly be other people who get into this race. The one thing we know for sure is that whoever wins the Democratic primary, that's tantamount to election in this district. It is a very safe, gerrymandered Democratic district. It is not at all like the district he started out in. We think of John Dingell as being from Dearborn, but when he was first elected, he represented just a part of Detroit. Detroit was so much larger then.
And now, of course, we know, as we've talked about, we've got this other big figure leaving Michigan politics in Democrat Carl Levin, who is not running for his Senate seat. Overall, what does this mean for Michigan's influence and toehold in Congress?
Well, of course, we're losing seniority. In the House right now, that doesn't matter quite so much since Democrats are in the minority and are very unlikely to take Congress back in this next election. But certainly Carl Levin was also a giant.
Yeah.
Carl Levin, however, some people said, and there's some truth in this, was far more concerned with the Armed Services Committee, National and World Affairs, than he was with Michigan. And to be sure, there's states where you go where you've had senior senators and congressmen where everything is named after them. They brought home a lot of pork barrel spending. While Dingell looked after the auto industry, neither Dingell or Levin were ever that interested in self-aggrandizement.
It isn't just here in Michigan, of course, that folks are deciding not to run again. We are seeing other lawmakers from both sides of the aisle deciding to head for the exit doors. Congressman Henry Waxman from California comes to mind. What concerns does all of that raise for you, Jack, when you think about what's ahead for Congress?
Well, what bothers me is that a lot of the people who are leaving are people like Dingell, not just because of age, but people who are more moderate. And people have been getting very weary of this sort of polarized whack-a-mole atmosphere where people don't talk to each other, where people demonize each other. I think that's a scary thing. I think that is something that causes concern. There's been other periods in American history when it was like this, too. There was a period in the 19th century where one congressman beat another one almost to death with a cane over some issue that he took offense to, and there have been people bringing guns onto the floor of Congress. There was one guy that used to bring his dogs till they made a rule you couldn't do that. So I think that there's a real concern that we're getting away from seeing the country as a united country and putting American concerns ahead of partisan concerns.
Let's circle back to John Dingell again. How did he rise to the power that he held for so long?
You know, I want to say something else about Dingell. It's something sort of unique. John Dingell first went to Congress not in 1955, but in 1933, when he was 6 years old. He walked into the House chambers holding the hand of his father, also named John Dingell, who'd just been elected, part of that wave of New Deal Democrats, came in with Franklin D. Roosevelt. He told me that is still etched in his memory. He thought the doors to Congress were the biggest doors he'd ever seen. And pretty much he spent his life there. He was a page. He was an elevator operator. He was a page on the floor of the Congress when Franklin D. Roosevelt made his famous Day of Infamy speech declaring war on Japan after Pearl Harbor. He was a lawyer in Detroit for a brief while. He served in World War II, one of only two surviving congressmen who did that. And then, of course, when his dad died of tuberculosis, he ran in a special election for his seat. But partly he rose through seniority system, and partly because he just became a bulldog on issues. People knew his word could be trusted, and he was also he was a very big man. We think of him as being kind of infirm now, but he was something like 6'5". They used to call him the truck. Very big man, very big and intimidating physically, but he also knew what he knew, and he knew how to count votes. I know a man who years ago was thinking about running for office against a friend of Congressman Dingell's, and Congressman Dingell called him in and very good-naturedly informed him that if he did that, he would be totally destroyed politically for life. John Dingell said, if you watch the House of Cards, John Dingell was sort of like a non-corrupt, non-evil Frank Underwood. He knew how to get it done, and he certainly did, but he was always, always respected. Now, there are people in Congress today who've been there. Of course, no one's been there as long as he, who mentally shouldn't be there, and they can't do the job anymore. Nobody said that of John Dingell. John Dingell chose when to leave, and he didn't leave because he couldn't do the job intellectually. I think that we need to make that very clear.
Can you give us a sense, Jack, what do you think history will say about John Dingell's time in Congress?
I think they'll say that he was a man primarily of Michigan, a man of the auto industry, a man who sometimes may have moved a little too late to embrace things like fuel emission standards and environmental standards, but who was capable of learning, of moving on the job. He was somebody who people could do business with. He was a man who was respected. And in his leaving today, I have not heard a single person say, well, it was past time. We wish he'd left a long time ago. They recognize that, you know, we all have a biological clock, and it was time for him to do this. If anything, they respect the fact that he did this now. But there's a lot of sadness, and that includes among some Republicans who often voted very differently from he.
We know that candidates for Congress have till April 22nd to get at least 1,000 petition signatures to get on that ballot for the August 5th primary. Does anyone come to mind other than Debbie Dingell that would have a shot at that race?
Frankly, I don't know. There'll certainly be some other people entering that race. I mean, John Dingell has represented that district forever. I mean, he's been there forever. He hasn't had any kind of a real challenge since they combined two districts and Michigan lost population About 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and he was thrown into a district with Lynn Rivers, from a Democrat from Ann Arbor, and she insisted on taking on John Dingell. She won Ann Arbor handily, but in Wayne County and Monroe County, she was obliterated. Dingell beat her about 3-2 in the primary, and he's never had the other time he had a challenge and he was not expected to survive it was early on, because he stood up for the civil rights bill, and he had a district, this was 1964, he had a district that was largely working class, blue collar, not especially enlightened white voters, and the Wall Street Journal thought he had virtually no chance to win the primary, but win the primary he did. So again, the idea of this district without Dingell is kind of like the idea of Ann Arbor without Zingerman's or Ann Arbor without the University of Michigan. And it may take a few days before things settle out, but I would guess that no matter what happens, whether Mrs. Dingell gets in there or not, it will be a contested primary.
Michigan Radio political commentator Jack Lessenberry. Always a pleasure, Jack. Thank you.
Same here.